Still to come on The Naked Scientist, we'll be finding out if the probiotic drinks that you see on sale in the supermarket can actually help us to combat allergies. But first, have you suffered from food poisoning lately? Well, statistics suggest that 10 million people around the UK every single year get locked to a loo seat for longer than they'd like just because of something they ate. And the chances are a lot of those cases are down to a bug called Campylobacter, which you actually find lurking in about 80% of the shop-bought chickens on sale. Here's Ben Valsler.
For this week's Kitchen Science, I've come to the University of Surrey in Guildford, and I've met up with Dr. Simon Park. Hi, Simon.
Hello.
Simon works on Campylobacter. Now, this is actually the most likely cause of food poisoning in the UK, but not many people know about it. So, Simon, how does Campylobacter get into us?
It lives in the farm environment in all the poultry flocks. So the flocks in the UK are actually endemically contaminated with Campylobacter. And when it infects chickens, it's perfectly at home at that environment. And the chickens are perfectly healthy. So it's a commensal of chickens. During the slaughtering process, the gut contents of the chicken contaminate the external meat and the carcass of the chicken and goes into the supermarkets. We take it into our homes. And it's really from that major source that we get Campylobacter infection.
What does it do to us when it does get in?
When it gets in, it causes a very, very painful diarrhea. It's one of the most painful types of food poisoning, and a lot of people that have the infection are mistakenly diagnosed as having appendicitis. It's that painful. It causes profuse, watery, and occasionally bloody diarrhea. And in most people that have acquired the infection, that sort of clears up naturally over a sort of a two-week period. But occasionally, you can get sort of relapses that can, you get stomach pains up to about 2 or 3 months afterwards.
But usually our stomach acid and the enzymes in our stomach would break down the bacteria that we get on our food. So how does Campylobacter survive?
Unlike a lot of other organisms like Salmonella and E. coli 0157, it's very sensitive in the laboratory. And if you subject it to acid conditions in the laboratory, it dies very quickly. But what you have to remember is that the stomach can have a very low pH, it can be very acidic, about pH 1 or pH 2, but it's only that acidic at certain times when there's not a lot of food in there. So when you eat the Campylobacter, it's quite likely that it can be protected within lumps of food or lumps of chicken and thereby survive the process of going through the stomach.
We also know that all of our digestive system is lined with its own complex spectrum of different bacteria, many of which we live with very happily that don't make us ill. How does Campylobacter establish a colony amongst all this other bacteria?
It's quite a specialised organism. It has quite a different shape compared to a lot of bacteria. What you see when you look down a microscope is a very fine sort of corkscrew-like organism that moves through liquid as if it was a corkscrew sort of spinning through an environment. And that gives it a relatively unique ability to move in very viscous environments. So when it comes into the gut of a human that's consumed it, what it does is it follows a path or a trace of chemicals that lead it to the wall of the gut. And whilst the lumen of the gut is packed full of bacteria, the very narrow environment between the tissue of the gut and the faeces is relatively unoccupied. So it swims towards that, and then its corkscrew shape and its drilling ability allows it to penetrate the tissue of the gut. So it has a specialised niche that it occupies in the human gut.
And once it's taken hold in that niche, how does it actually do the damage? Does it multiply so quickly that its sheer numbers hurt us, or does it release a toxin?
Well, it certainly multiplies into huge numbers, but as to how it actually causes illness, I mean, I started working with it about 20 years ago, and we still don't know. It does produce a toxin, and it also has been shown to invade gut tissue. So these are sort of two possible mechanisms. And thirdly, it may be that because you get such high numbers of the organism there, the immune system over-responds to the infection, and it damages the gut tissue in terms of a collateral effect, so that the actual symptoms of diarrhea, inflammation and pain may be generated by your immune system overreacting to the infection.
Well, it certainly sounds like something we should avoid. Is there any way we can avoid it?
It's very difficult to avoid. If you eat meat, and particularly you eat chicken, it's contaminates, depending on what study you read, up to 70 to 90% of supermarket chicken. So you must be aware of that, and when you handle things like raw chicken, you need to obviously use separate chopping boards and separate knives to do that, but also be very careful when you're washing your hands. If, for example, you take a piece of chicken out or a chicken carcass out of a fridge, you touch it, you start chopping it up into joints, then think about washing your hands. The first thing you do is go over to the sink, turn the taps on, and you touch the taps. You then wash your hands, and the next thing you do is turn the tap off, and you immediately recontaminate yourself because you've just touched the tap.
On the subject of transmitting bacteria is really the reason I've come to see you, because for this week's Kitchen Science, we know that coughs and sneezes can spread diseases, and that's how many respiratory infections actually get transferred. But you were thinking there might be another way that bacteria could be transmitted.
Yes, I have two sons, Joe and Josh, who are age 5 and 7, and they've developed a sort of obsession with this homemade biological prank, farting. And I thought, why do we find this so offensive, and why is it dangerous, and can I demonstrate this to my children to stop them doing it? So I thought of some experiments where I could actually prove whether or not farts could transmit bacteria. So what I've done is taken some McConkie agar plates that are very good at culturing fecal bacteria, and done some very crude experiments where we've exposed the plates to people farting in terms of a naked fart with no pants and no jeans on, and also people farting with underpants and jeans on.
So you've set this up by passing wind, shall we say, on what's called a McConkie's agar mm-hmm. plate. And I believe that you actually have some of these plates to show us.
Yes.
So later on in the show, we will get these plates out and have a look and see what bacteria have actually grown.
So can bacteria get through the layers of underpants and denim? Should we have a no flatulence zone around hospitals? Well, Ben will be back soon, rather stinkily, with the results.
The Naked Scientist Podcast, brought to you by thenakedscientist.com.